Welcome to the 100th episode of the Life Leadership Podcast with myself, Leela Singh. In celebration of this milestone achievement, which is both personal and professional, and the generous time and commitment of the inspiring and accomplished guests I've had the pleasure of speaking to over the last 3 years, who've shared their stories, the challenges they've overcome, their wins and career success. These next few episodes will include a montage of some of the key highlights and takeaways for you. This is part one of three montage episodes combining some of the key highlights from our guest interviews. Enjoy listening and do share with me your favorite soundbite or episode, and I'll see you next time.
Well, I told myself at the end before I retire, I've got to be one of those youngest females vice president of technology one day. Female leadership is crucial to have balance. Mm-hmm. And the balance actually creates a better impact for any organization. And it kind of creates not just the business productivity, but also the human dimension. I really like to turn a sinking boat around. This is in my DNA. So which means that any role that I've picked, I like to pick the toughest role. Because you must be able to connect with people when there's nothing there for you to do in the business together. There's nothing physical. There's just friendship. That is the art of influence. Someone believes in you. Somebody will influence the situation. That's what I believe in. And I believe in that every day in my life. As a case example myself, right? When you want to become a vice president, what does it take to be? I ask myself that every day, every single day. And I look at a mirror and I actually ask myself that. Why would anyone hire me? Why? And there's a few things that I do for myself, right? There's some interesting materials that I read over and over again. It sounds weird, but I do that. Mm-hmm. I actually read certain chapters from Michelle Obama's autobiography over and over again, though I know what it is, but I still want to read it. It kind of creates an impact on my mind when someone like her, who was born in a nowhere part of the US, not in an influential family, to a very simple family, who became the first lady of United States of America. What made her change her career? What made her invest in herself? What made her her?
And it wasn't until I went to a leadership meeting when I was about 30 again, it was a real sort of pivotal time in my career, when I looked around the room and there was, like, you know, 150 people in the room and there was four women, and I thought, where are they all? And it really was that point where I realized how in the minority females were in that industry. When you look at the kind of pipeline into the tech industry, we only have 17% of young people coming into tech that are female. So this is a very multifaceted problem. Not only do we have, you know, pipeline problems into the sector, mm-hmm. but we also have progression issues within the sector. I see a lot of focus on, you know, building communities for women in technology to engage. So I do think we're making the right sort of steps to improve it. But I think we've still got such a lot more to do. There's a lot of still unconscious bias, I think, out there about what women want to do and what they don't want to do. So I think we've still got some work to do there. A lot of women do not speak out about the kind of ambition that they have. You know, often they'll keep their head down, do a really good job and think that somebody will notice. But actually building those connections and making sure that people know what your ambition and aspirations are is a really important thing to do. And just asking, you know, will you yeah. be my sponsor? Is you know, what's the worst thing that can happen? Three of my current non-executive positions came through my network. So if people, mm-hmm. you know, have got a sense of who you are, what you've done, what your ambition or aspirations are, the importance of those relationships and networks cannot be underestimated.
And then I think the last point I would say about diversity and how we can attract more women to tech is there is still a perception issue. So particularly I've got a science background, and my company actually do a state of science index. They do a big global survey, and they look at perceptions of science. And I don't know if you have the current data, but I think it was last year they found that, I think it was 37% of people believe you have to be a genius to go into science, right? I'm not a genius. I think most people who work in tech or science are not genius. First of all, I would say it's where the action is. You know, it's the cutting edge. The definition of technology, it's changing the world. So, you know, I think that, you know, there's some seriously exciting stuff, especially at the moment. You know, we've got autonomous vehicles, we've got the emergence of AI, you know, all these things that maybe have been in the labs. They've been in the labs for a long time, but they're emerging, you know, they're coming out into the world. So I think the first thing is whatever role you do within tech, you can make such a difference, you know, and it really is cutting edge stuff. So it's the kind of the range of you can be that change. So if you can pioneer to a certain extent going into technology, if you are a bit different, then that's going to drive innovation. So it's almost like you can use, you know, when you're at school and you just desperately want to fit in, and everybody wants to fit in, it's human nature to want to fit in. In actual fact, if you've got reasons to stand out, then that will drive innovation. So I would almost say that's a reason to go into it, because maybe you don't see as many people that are like you in the industry. Finding what the organization needs, sometimes before it knows that it needs it, and then being the one that can offer that. So having that kind of unique skill set. She would also say to me, she's always saying, step out of your comfort zone, because that's where the magic happens.
That was a challenge for me to speak out for myself, saying, okay, I do the good job and I want this to be evaluated in the right way for me. Self-confidence gap, which women usually have. Mm-hmm. We are not that good in self-promoting ourselves, especially in terms of when we're doing a good job. It's just we're doing a job, right? I mean, what the deal? So this kind of a marketing side of our achievements, it's still a challenge. And I can say from my perspective, women have a tendency to skip a networking part of any business meetings. So usually we treat this as a kind of a not important part. So really we actually not making our, let's say, personal branding presence there. No one knows that. Mm-hmm. So then it's like when it comes to make a career project progression discussion, our names are not known, our faces are not known for those who are making a decision right on. So it's extremely important to socialize and to be connected. We talk really about management of the others' perception about who we are, what kind of leaders we are. And I think this is another strong component of being the personal leadership present around, because that could be like two, three people in the same meeting, and all of them can have a different perception of what actually happened.
Yeah,
this part is extremely important for us to develop, to be sure that we are aware about ourselves. I mean, we are self-aware about our biases, our, let's say, stereotypes we have. For me, investing in personal growth is like investing in intellectual capital, which is equal like to investing in the financial capital. So definitely, if we would like to advance our career, we need to just ask for what we want. That's beginning and the end. Only if we don't tell people what we want, we cannot expect that people will know what we want.
Every business, no matter if it's a services business, a product business, it's all based on people and it's all based on relationships. Build relationships with people, number one, proactively. So you have relationships formed cross-functionally before you might need them. What does cross-functionally mean? So if you're in the engineering department, building relationships with sales, with marketing, with the manufacturing teams, with the customer services teams, and you do that before you need those relationships to be enabled, leading like a champion today. And they're like, well, what does that mean? And I said, well, it's got three key words in it, leading, champion, and today. And leadership and these attributes come together for me as being a visible role model of excellence, right? So that's what leadership in a nutshell is for me, a visible role model of excellence. So you're establishing what good looks like. You're communicating through your actions and your behavior and your attitudes to your team members, to your customers, to your suppliers, to all of your stakeholders about excellence. Being a champion is a great word because especially in a global enterprise, when you're leading global teams, the word champion resonates with everybody. Whether you're sitting in the UK or Brazil or Russia or China or South Korea or in the United States, everybody knows what champion is, which is about being the absolute best that you can be. And then today, today has the importance of not just time, but urgency. Right. You start now, this afternoon, not tomorrow, not next week, not next quarter. You start now. So being a visible role model of excellence, being a champion, doing the absolute best that you can do, and you start now.
The ability to concisely deliver a message, have it understood by the recipient, and for them to understand what you need to do and how you need to engage. So there was an awful lot of commonality between what a good primary school classroom teacher can do and what a good sales and marketing person can do. It took me a while to really understand that because initially there didn't seem to be that much commonality between them. But over time I've learned, and as I go forward, I've even learned even more that there's a huge basis and it's all down into that communication layer. Having worked for large companies over time, to have been put on and gone through development courses. And one that I remember in the earlier part of the 2000s was all about, how you develop yourself as a person, and how you look at risk and risk assessments. And that whole idea of, well, what is the worst case? If this went completely wrong in whatever measurement wrong is, what are the downsides? What is the worst case outcome? And then, okay, now that you know that, what would your mitigation be? How would you mitigate against that being the case? Mm-hmm. And how would you avoid that being the ultimate case? And once you know that, you say, well, okay, now I know what I'm risking. I really understand that at great level. And therefore, I'm now making a decision with full eyes wide open. And if it does go wrong, I know what my mitigation strategy is going to be. I know what I'm going to do to, safeguard certain aspects. Or it could go the whole way and I might have to have a different reality. But I have now made a decision with my pros and cons, with my worst case scenario, fully understood and described for myself and others to ensure that I'm being realistic. And then you now have a perfect platform to make a decision. So either say yes to something new or different, or say no, that's not appropriate at this time. So again, it kind of goes back to a basic: do the research, understand the marketplace, understand the new opportunity in it as much as you can, and be realistic about your pros and cons assessments.
I think the greatest thing, fear or challenge, is stepping into the unknown and picking up a role that is totally alien or uncomfortable for you. And I've had a few of those, particularly in EDS and HP, and even in Sage. That was a big step for me moving into Sage. It's different, or picking a role that is uncomfortable. Learn to be comfortable being uncomfortable is a good statement. But that's a big challenge. And in the early days of my career, that was really hard. Stomach churning, sleepless nights, think you're going to fail. But as you grow older, and I think it is a wisdom thing as well, it's all right to try, and as long as you can be uncomfortable and have a support network around you to recognize you're stepping up, that's one thing. Or if you're doing it of your own volition or there aren't people around, learn to deal with that stress or that adrenaline or that discomfort, to learn. And I wish I'd done that more to a certain extent, because when you step into that unknown and do a different role and roles that people would think, oh, he'll never do that, he's not one of those, it spurs you on. So how do you catapult your career faster than you would ever think possible, if that's what you want, by learning from the unknown and becoming good at it, competent at it, and being recognized for that? So you can't necessarily be expected to know it all and be fully, fully, highly competent to start with. But typically, that network around you are willing for you to succeed. So they will encourage you, they will help. You've got to ask for help. It's not always easy. It's a sign of strength, but people don't always recognize it's a sign of strength. But asking for help, even just for somebody to explain something, or even to say, I don't know that, I'll go and do some research and come and get, I'll ask for some guidance. You can flourish that way, but don't pretend you know. Because sometimes it's easy to pretend you know, and that could get you into deep water quickly, depending on what industry you're in.
For me, my key takeaway of the winning culture of what I've learned over the last 15, 16 years managing multiple different businesses, multiple peoples, probably fall into, you know, four or five key points. One, hiring great and smart people. I would actually say hiring smarter people than yourself and people that will complement you. Number two, building a winning culture, I've realized, is not about having only top performers across the board. But what's important is about your ability to identify and leverage some of your key team members who will be your best ambassadors to drive that winning culture. So you see, Lita, that's really about managing by influence. The third aspect is really to maintain that united front approach. Leading by example is something which remains. I've heard many times that, you know, this word run into the fire, you know, which is a kind of warrior expression. But the general cannot tell his team, his army, go and run into the fire. You run into the fire first, then your team will follow. That's the way it should work. Lastly, I'm a big fan of really managing expectation upwards, but also challenging people. And what I like doing is really about raising the bar. So I had the opportunity to have to manage, you know, great people, great reps, you know, high performers. You don't want to raise the bar here with them. You want to raise the bar here with them. You want them to go, you know, to the next level. They have huge potential. They have huge capacity. They can do even better, right? You want to send them into the moon. That's really what you want to do.
It's really hard to say no, particularly, you know, when you're trying to breed collaboration. But actually, my view on it is the more you say no, the more important a yes is, because when you say yes, it has much, much more meaning. And people know that you are 100% behind it. Worse still is not doing anything. Worse still is a maybe, or worse still is a go and give me some more data. Or, you know, I think, again, if you feel that something is not right for that individual, for you personally, for the organization, for the client, saying no quickly, it means people completely understand where you're on the line. I would say that the no's I've said, even in my personal career, in the last three decades, have been way more powerful and have led to much better opportunities than the yeses I've said, actually. You just have to be very, very clear that if you are saying yes to something, you are often committing resources, time, investment. Your offer means you have to say no to other things. So you have to really think about all of those things before you can give a blanket yes. And I think, you know, distraction in a business or distraction in your career from things that are not important are the biggest inhibitor of progress. And so being able to, you know, exclude things so you focus on the most important things is hugely important. And that does mean that you have to say no.
To touch on, you know, you used the word learning over 35 years. Hopefully the amount that I'm learning hasn't stopped just because I've been it's something you have to actively do all the time, is to just improve yourself, improve your knowledge and learn more and more and more and more as the world gets more global, more complicated. You have to keep up with that pace of change yourself and in your own learning. So learning is a constant. So I just wanted to touch on that. Now, you know, back in career management, you know, I think, you know, when you come out of the schooling system, a lot of things are handed to you. And you just follow a path that's, and you're guided down that path. And, you know, even at university, but then you suddenly get into the wide, wide old world and you think that some of that is going to continue. And I think the biggest realization I had anyway was I own my own career and I'm not going to wait for someone to come and own it for me, to tell me what to do, how to do it. And I think it's very, very important that you realize that early in your career that you own it. People could advise you, mentor you, guide you, but you really do own it, and you should invest in it and invest time in it. I wish I'd have perhaps started a little sooner in that realization, but I own my career, and I love what I do. I've loved what I've done, and I'm still enjoying work. So I guess at a one level, it's kind of worked out. Because, you know, I'm very, you know, very satisfied with, and I just had fun. I mean, I think that's the most important thing. If you can combine work and enjoyment together, those two things fit very well. But it starts with owning it.
Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already done so. And if you enjoyed and gained value from today's episode, then do please leave a review telling us your key learnings and what you enjoyed the most. And do please share this podcast with your friends and colleagues so we can spread the word on life leadership, creating a life of choice, freedom, and new possibilities. Connect with me directly on LinkedIn. And if you would like to learn more about how we can work together, either DM me on LinkedIn or email me. All details and resources can be found in the show notes.